Hello, people in podcast land. Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast, where we have sat here for like 5 minutes trying to think of an interesting intro to this episode, and fuck me, we could not think of one. So we're just going to say hi.
What's wrong with a plain old hi? Hello. Yeah,
there's nothing wrong. It's good and old fashioned, and you know where you stand with a hi. Hi, I'm Tom Denny.
Bonjour, auf Wiedersehen, and buongiorno. I am Toddly T, Todd Jordan. You know me.
I do know you, you multilingual bastard, you.
Konnichiwa, motherfuckers! We are here to do the entire Nightmare on Elm Street wrap-up. We have gone beyond the bitter end of season 5. We've seen every single bit of Freddy Krueger that is out there. We've taken it all in. And you have heard our thoughts and have taken all of us in. And here we are together to just mull in the soup of things Bobby UK.
Indeed. We have, I must stress, we've really like fully absorbed the Bobby UK film canon. There are other strings to the Elm Street bow, and we'll dip our toes into that bow. I'm really fucking up my mixed metaphors here. Oh, shit.
Tom,
but we're gonna just carry on. My first question
for you, Tom, can you explain what a bow is? Doesn't seem like you know.
It's like a body of water, isn't it?
Like Bromley by Bow.
Yeah, there we go.
So look, how many movies? 8 movies? 9 movies? I think it's 9 movies.
Yeah. So there's
a lot of movies.
There's what have we got? We got like 6 to the original canon? No, 7.
Yeah, 7 original, then Freddy vs. Jason, and then the remake. 9 movies, man.
It's a lot of movies old Bobby's done.
And it does change a lot from start to finish. So, like, if you compare your thoughts from watching the first movie to, like, throughout, what I would say is that the first movie is really, really strong.
Oh, undoubtedly.
It loses the plot very, very quickly. If it wasn't for Dream Warriors, which I really loved, I would say that the franchise would have been a lot shorter, to be honest. I think if the third one had been a bit of a stinker, that might have been the end of it.
I think, like, it was very successful when it came out. Like, I don't, not just like that people were into it, were like, yeah, this is a badass film, because obviously you're going to think that, but I think it made bucks, you know, like, and it was, they wobbled on the second one, they got Wes back in to kind of right the ship, and then by that point they were just kind of snowballing, making money out of Freddy.
Money talks and bullshit walks, as they say.
Indeed, it does. And yeah, I agree that like the first one is just like, that's a classic, isn't it? And then, yeah, aside from Dream Warriors, which I'm just all about, when can I watch Dream Warriors again? A lot of the other ones, and we've only just watched them quite recently, but they've all kind of blurred into one. And I feel like maybe I've gotten Freddy fatigued more so than Jason fatigue when we did Friday the 13th. And there's way more of those. I mean, there's definitely some duff ones in there, but
it's weird that there weren't any low points in this as low as, oh, I'm going to say Friday the 13th, 5. I'm going to say Highlander 6. I'm going to say The Howling 7. I'm going to say all kinds of bits of the Universal Soldiers, except for the first and last.
Yeah.
No, none of the low points have been as bad. But as a whole, it's just been a kind of a, it's just a soup, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really weird that, like, I totally agree that it's quite a strong franchise, and it does go off the rails, and there are bits that really fucked us off, I think, when we were watching it, but in the grand scheme of things, is not that bad. I think maybe a lot of it stems from the potential in the first film is so good and strong that it just seems like, it seems wholly unnecessary doing any of the other films, and maybe this is like the downside of horror, that like you kind of have to kill the baddie, but then instantly undo the baddie being dead. So there's no stakes in that, like in terms of like it's like telling a whole story and then undoing it in the last 5 minutes, which they definitely, you know, they definitely did that with Friday, and I think that's just like a horror trope, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a lot on the last episode, but I think the real downfall is how limiting that idea of the horror coming from a blurred line between what's real and what's not. Am I going crazy? Is this real? Is this not? And it's, as you say, it's doesn't take long for the stakes to just become nothing. If it's just like a series of people waking up from bad dreams.
Yes. The set pieces got bigger and bigger. And I think that the set pieces, they're not as, the bigger they get, the less scary they necessarily get.
Because they got more contemporary as well. They started injecting like, oh, now Freddy's going to play a video game in this one.
Yeah. Whereas like in the first film, obviously, the dream sequences are very close to real life. They're just in this dream version of the same town. There's nothing like super out of the ordinary. Whereas, like, you know, like later on down the line, you've got this like giant diving board that tries to eat you, and then you fall down a giant hole, and then you're in a video game, and all these kind of things. And that's cool, kind of for what it is, but it's not as scary as something that you think might be real life.
Absolutely, and that there's too many signifiers that we're in like Freddy's world. Off mic earlier, just before we started recording, Tom made a really cool, astute observation.
Ooh,
to
good
me.
For me.
Yes. On the podcast before, we've said that the trouble is that Freddy Krueger, as played by Bobby UK, kind of turns into Wile E. Coyote, right?
Mm.
That's not strictly true. What the problem is that he turns into The Mask, as played by Jim Carrey, and he's basically running around going, like, smoking.
Yes, he is the proto-mask, isn't he?
Yeah. Robert Englund, we love your work. Don't worry, man, we're not coming after you.
Yeah, yeah. I know we've been ribbing on Bobby, but we're big fans of Bobby. I wonder whose decision it was to, like, drive that character in.
I think
that
it was probably a slow erosion. Like once Wes Craven was away from the driver's seat, it was probably just like a misunderstanding. Like from less skillful director of people that, you know, just understand what horror is.
Yeah, and it doesn't work as well as like the scene, like the gravity room scene.
Love that scene.
Fucking great scene. And like, but that is so different from some of these other, like the bit when he turns into a superhero. Like, those are poles apart. And one of those is genuinely, like, scary and disturbing. And one of those is just, like, some people sat around making a film, go like, do you know, what would be a fun thing? Like, it stops being like, what's a scary thing that we can get Freddy to do? It's be like, what's a fun thing that we can get Freddy to do? And they kind of like lose sight on what the purpose of the nightmares is. Like, it's meant to be scary, not like bulking up the old showreel with the
yeah. I think that's really true, and I wonder if part of that is to do with, like, I was a kid growing up in the 80s. I knew who Freddy Krueger was long before I could have ever seen any of these films, and I wonder if they were somewhere the decision was made that they could rinse a bit more money out of it by making them a little bit more kid-friendly.
I think that they're obviously very aware that, like, kids are then watching this, like, on, they're getting their parents or, like, you know, bigger brother or whatever to, like, rent it for them at the video shop, and then half the audience that you're playing to is, like, not old enough to go and see your film.
And they got to do it with a bit of a wink and a nod, kind of.
The power glove, kids!
Yeah, oh, well, exactly.
Great graphics!
On the subject of, like, playing the franchise to children,
yeah.
Am I right in thinking, Tom, that you've been reading some of the Nightmare on Elm Street comic books?
Well, I've been doing having a little bit of look at some of, like, the printed media that exists out there.
Print media, yeah, literature.
Literature. So I've been looking at this comic that my good friend Todd Jordan got for me.
You're welcome, buddy.
Nightmares on Elm Street. This was by Innovation Comics. So there's a bunch of people that have, like, put out Elm Street Comics. I think Marvel did only like two issues originally, and then they cancelled it because they were aware, they were like, we're going to get a load of flack for, like, even though they're marketing this as for adults because of what Marvel normally do, they were like, we're going to get a load of shit for all the violence in this, so we're just going to can this. And then Innovation did this one, Nightmares on Elm Street. The cover of this comic is fucking bananas.
I'm looking at it now, and there's a lot of baffling things on this cover, and it's not even that complicated.
So it's a giant Freddy Krueger stalking a lady in an improbable bit of negligee.
She looks like something from like a Renaissance painting.
Yeah. Set to the backdrop of Big Ben in London, where the clock is striking 13. And the comic opens with like a Jack the Ripper reference. And you're kind of like, is Freddy Jack the Ripper now? Is he in London? What's going on?
What is going on?
So the person dreaming of Jack the Ripper Freddy is one of Nancy's old roommates. She calls herself in the comic a Ripperologist. That's a thing. She's like really into Jack the Ripper, and apparently like a new Jack, like they've discovered Jack the Ripper's diaries, and that's become a published thing or whatever. Anyway, she's dreaming about Freddy, and she feels like the need to look up, like I think Nancy is appearing in the dreams, so she's like trying to look up Nancy. Obviously this came out after Dream Warriors, so Nancy's dead, man. Nancy's dead. She finds out that Nancy is dead. She meets up with, like, Dr. Neil. He's back.
Oh, cool.
Like, the little kind of, like, paper mache house, you know, that, like, Dr. Neil had, that makes an appearance. So it's quite nice that, like, they're playing back on some of these things. I've only, like, I've read, like, the issue that Todd's gotten me, but I haven't, like, read the whole thing. But there's quite a cool, like, the dream set pieces. There's one of the characters that pops up is, like, a fashion designer. And so she has this dream of, like, it's like a Freddy Krueger fashion show. So all the audience are, like, zombies, basically. They're all corpses. And all the models are wearing, like, sexy versions of the classic Freddy Krueger outfit, like the hat and the jumper.
Oh my god.
And she is wearing a dress that looks like it's made out of human skin. It's got a face on it.
That's dope.
Yeah, and then her sewing machine has four razor things
nice
on it and
touch.
And like mashes her hand up. That's cool. And then this other guy gets killed by being thrown by Freddy into like a printing press, and he makes lots of like newspaper related jokes. I assume that the character worked in newspapers, but I do not think it was mentioned anywhere earlier. And like he's on one page like before that, and then suddenly he's killed in a printing press. And I'm kind of like, what is? I was a bit confused. I then got even more confused when I was just flicking through pages, and suddenly I was reading a Quantum Leap comic. Basically, the same publisher were doing a Quantum Leap comic, and they put like a preview of like two pages in the middle, and I hadn't clocked that, like, there's a page saying, and now a preview of the Quantum Leap comic. I just thought it was an ad. I just flipped through it, and I was like, I'm deeply confused. Like, very strange.
Ziggy says that you're in the body of Fred Krueger.
Oh my god, that'd be fucking amazing. Afterwards, it's got like this big splash ad for the comic. Todd, can you just read what it says?
Why, certainly, Tom. Let me just take a big sip of my tea.
What?
It says, hang on, I'm going to do my best Scott Bakula voice here. Oh boy, it's a comic book.
I just really enjoyed that.
I thought that was lovely.
Nice little bit of Quantum Leap there in the middle of your Freddy action. The only other, like, so there's a few other things just of note in this comic book. The girl who's like the Ripperologist accidentally falls asleep by standing up too fast and fainting.
That isn't sleep.
Yeah. But then when she falls asleep another time, she meets in her dreams Nancy. And I think what happens with the rest of this story arc is that Nancy is like a good Freddy Krueger. She's like a good dream person.
Ooh,
so that's cool.
That's a cool idea.
So there's only like, but I just want to quickly touch this, like one of the novels, like not novelizations, one of the novels, like spin-off novels. called A Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Dealers. I just had a look through like what the synopses were for like all of these books.
Yeah.
So in this one, yeah, dreams have been digitized and you can record them and download them. So they're all on the internet, which then basically kind of turns Freddy Krueger into like some dream equivalent of an internet virus. And they've got to stop him before he goes global. That sounds shit.
Well, that sounds like a cool, like, Lawnmower Man.
Yes!
Yeah, like...
Okay, so we got to have the Nightmare on Elm Street Quantum Leap crossover, and then we need to do the Elm Street Lawnmower Man crossover, yeah?
Oh, mate, yes, please.
All about that.
Whoa, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so shit, don't get me wrong.
But also kind of fun.
I kind of would read the fuck out of that. If anybody wants to buy us a copy of that book and send it to me, I will gladly story time the fuck out of it.
Lovely. Now, Todd, could you tell me a little story, perhaps about some of Mr. Bobby UK's forays into music?
Why, I'm glad you asked, Tommy. Because one of the weird quirks of this franchise is that in the year 1988... it was the year that I believe Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, was released.
Okay.
In the year 1988, Freddy Krueger sort of burst onto the pop music scene with not one, but two hip-hop tracks from separate acts the same year.
Fucking hell.
And I've had a little bit of a delve into these. So the very first one to talk about is a song called Are You Ready for Freddy?
I was born ready.
By a hip-hop trio called The Fat Boys.
It's time for Freddy. See, I'm a popular guy. If you don't know yet, you're gonna find out why.
Big fuck place with Elm Street late one night. I look like a ghost town. No one in sight.
With the hat like a vagabond.
Dead like a flash
gun. It's the big time.
Fred Krueger.
That is a spicy meatball.
Oh yeah, that song is heavy hitting. Pardon the Fat Boys themed pun.
I mean, straight up, he says, "My name's Freddy Krueger and I'm here to say," and it's like, whoa. What the, like, in the video for it, it's got Bobby UK in it, it's got samples from the films and like clips from the films and the video. So this was obviously made with the full cooperation of the studio. It wasn't like a cash-in, like they've...
Oh yeah, buddy, this was released in 88 and it was the official song of Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. It's got actually Heather Langenkamp's voice sampled from the film,
yeah.
From the first film,
yeah.
Mind you. No samples from Dream Master, but sampled all the way throughout. It's not actually about anything. I've looked at the lyrics. It's just Freddy introducing himself and then the Fat Boys going, yeah, his name's Freddy. He's wearing a hat.
It's still, far more appropriate than the Cool Moe Dee song.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what is it? And that was for the following film.
Yeah, is that song about his beef with LL Cool J?
It absolutely was. So this is even before Cool Moe Dee. This predates. This is the earliest instance of Freddy in hip-hop. There is one line that references The Dream Warriors, the previous film,
nice.
Which is, yo, y'all never forget what he did to the girl with the TV set.
Nice, okay.
That's about it. Parts of the song are actually rapped by Robert Englund. Bobby UK went into the studio, and I've got some of his rhymes for you right here.
Hit me.
Freddy Krueger's the name. You know my game. Elm Street's the place. You got the time. Listen to this. You're Busta Rhyme. My name is Freddy, and I'm here to say I'll wrap you up and I'll take you away. If you feel like you're tired and you're ready for bed, don't fall asleep or you'll wake up dead.
Oh, he's a Renaissance man, isn't he, Mr. UK?
There is very little he can't do. Actually, correct that, there's very little he won't attempt.
Yes, and I appreciate a tryer very much. Is there more to Freddie's pop career?
Well, there is more to Freddie's pop career, specifically in hip-hop, specifically in hip-hop from 1988.
It was a bold year.
It was on a track called A Nightmare on My Street by a little-known hip-hop combo, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Oh, what?
Also known as Will Smith.
Fuck me.
Yeah, also released in 88. It was considered for inclusion in the soundtrack of Part 4, The Dream Master, but was decided against.
Ooh, egg on their face.
Yeah, in fact, after the song was recorded, New Line Cinema sued the record label for copyright infringement, and they were forced to destroy the music video that they had made, the Freddy Krueger-themed music video with Will Smith. It got destroyed.
Yeah.
So you can't watch it. They eventually settled out of court, but this is extra weird because the song, like the Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince song, samples the Charles Bernstein theme from the first film. You know, the dung, 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 dung. But when it was released on vinyl, it had a sticker on it saying, "This song is not part of the soundtrack and is not authorized, licensed, or affiliated with the Nightmare on Elm Street films."
Wow.
So the lyrics, it's our little story. It's a story of Will Smith going on a date with a lady to see the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Gives a little shout out to Nancy. Then he goes home and he falls asleep. He gets terrorized by Freddy, who suggests that they go on a killing spree together. Will Smith says,
"Oh my God."
Will Smith says, "No thanks."
Well, he doesn't even like cursing on his song, no. So he's definitely not going to be up for that.
Then Freddy attacks him, but then it turns out it was all a dream. And the song ends with Will Smith phoning up Jazzy Jeff and being like, "Hey, Jazzy Jeff, whatever you do, don't fall asleep." Right? And then Jazzy Jeff on the other end of the line gets killed, starts screaming.
Oh my God.
And Freddy Krueger picks up the phone and goes, "I'm your DJ now, Princey."
Oh my God. This sounds amazing. I'm so sad they had to destroy the video.
Here's the opening verse.
Okay.
"Now I have a story that I'd like to tell about this guy. You all know me and he's scared as hell. He comes to me at night after I crawl into bed. He's burnt up like a weenie.
That song has really like made me miss that trend in like the late 80s, early 90s of having a hip hop song in a film about the film. It takes you back, doesn't it?
It was a golden age. And speaking of going back to a golden age, Tom, we have got a special segment by the Bitter End video game correspondent. We've mentioned him on a couple of episodes before. His name's Milo. He's the video game king of Brighton. And he is here to talk to us about the little-known Nightmare on Elm Street video game. Milo, what you got for us?
Hi, I'm Milo.
What's up?
We brought you here to talk to us about the Nightmare on Elm Street game for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Okay, so this is one of those classic LJN games, yeah.
What's LJN?
LJN was a video game publisher, notorious for releasing a slew of terrible games.
They did a lot of, like licensed games, right?
A lot of licensed games. They did a Jaws, they did a Terminator 2, a shed load of WWF games.
Oh my God.
Okay.
And originally they were just a toy manufacturer.
Okay, but yeah. they were just having a punt.
Yeah, having a punt. So they'd never actually developed the games themselves.
Okay, so yeah, who's...
So all the developers. So the game in question we're talking about was actually developed by Rare.
Rare, who did Donkey Kong Country?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Donkey Kong Country series, they were amazing.
Yeah.
They completely...
They were just working some things out with this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think apparently the story goes, they imported like the original NES from Japan and backwards sort of engineered it and figured out how to program it and then went to Nintendo in Kyoto, showed them some tech demos, and Nintendo just gave them limitless funds to go and make loads of Nintendo / Famicom games. And they ended up making some absolute classics like Battletoads. Do you remember Battletoads?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Right, so that is interesting to me because
yes.
Rare have done some good games.
Mm-hmm.
I have not played this game.
It's okay. not one of the, you know, one of the best NES games. It was never released in Europe. It was only ever released in North America. And considering the, you know, the content, the sort of subject matter, it's not a very Nintendo friendly game.
Just to check, what sort of year did it come out, roughly, give or take?
It was November 1990. I know this.
Oh my God.
Done my research.
This is why you are the video game king.
I even had a quick go before it came out, and I didn't get very far.
Right, okay, so could you walk us through, like, what is the gameplay? Because, like, 1990, that's pretty late in the proceedings. Like, they've done a bit like the Friday the 13th game, like, came out, like, after they'd done about seven of them or
yeah,
something,
so it's
right?
Six years after, when did the first one, 1984, wasn't it?
84,
So, yeah, it was 6 years after. I think they were just, like, rinsing all these licences. So anything...
If it's one thing they've liked to do with our good friend Robert England, it's rinse that money out of him.
So anyway, the game is often hated because it's compared to, like, some of the other classic NES side-scrolling horror-based games like Castlevania. You play as a teenager on Elm Street.
Classic.
Mission to find all of Freddy's bones. It's like a side-scrolling 2D platformer. You run around and you've got to keep running because if you stop, then your sleep meter depletes. Mm. As soon as this depletes... And you can also, it also depletes if you get hit by enemies. As soon as it depletes, you go into this dream world, okay? This is the cool aspect of the game.
Yeah.
This is probably another one of its saving graces. And it's actually quite, you know, quite different from, like, a lot of the other sort of side-scrolling games at the time. So you go to this dream world and it's like, all the enemies change. It goes all dark and, like, there's all these, like, skeletons come out of the ground and stuff. And they're tougher to defeat. And you can transform into different characters, different abilities. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then the premise of the game is still the same. You still have to jump around these horrible little platform areas and, like, collect all Freddy's bones. And once you've collected them all, then you get to fight a boss and move on to the next level.
Sounds a bit more like Dream Warriors in that respect, that you you can get some powers in the dream world.
Yeah, okay, but at the time, you know, it was good. Yeah.
So the character, like the hero or heroine character, are you just like a generic teen, or is there, like, more backstory?
Well, funnily enough, apparently the original game, you're going to be actually playing as Freddy, and you were supposed to, like, hunt down a horde of these obnoxious teenagers, trying to get rid of them by scattering bones and burying them. It sounded quite cool, and, like, yeah, supposedly it was very controversial at the time.
I wonder why.
I don't.
If you made that now, you could. I think you could definitely make something to that effect now. Surely,
I think Nintendo at the time, they were very family orientated. It was generally, it's not quite the same demographic as you get now on current.
I think also it was the early days of video gaming where the rules weren't really established. You know, like, it's like the Old West. Like, everyone's just kind of like, well, I don't know. Can we do this? Should we do this?
Is it one of those games where basically, like, if you died, you had to go all the way back to the beginning?
I was playing it earlier, and you get a fair amount of lives, actually. I died quite a lot. I kept on getting killed by bats, basically shitting rocks.
Classic.
I love that scene from the film. Heather Longenkamp.
An absolute classic scene.
Yeah, like, Freddy pops up and says, "It's batshit, bitch."
Hey, you want one where the kid gets to be a murderer in this one? Yeah, why the fuck not?
I mean, we've said this before, that a lot of these films that were definitely not made to kids were kind of playing to a kid's audience. They knew that one of the sides their bread should be buttered on had children on it. I'm fucking up all my metaphors again, aren't I?
Tom, you and your bloody metaphors.
Anyway, one of the saving graces as well of the game is the music.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually a really cool soundtrack.
That's some badass music, bruh.
Yeah, it's pretty rocking.
Thank you, Milo. Most informative, I'm sure you'll agree. Now, the Freddy train does not stop there, because there's a TV series. They did a series on television, Freddy's Nightmares, two seasons of it.
44 episodes.
44 episodes, and you know, our policy here at the Bitter End is like, we're just watching the films. We're not fucking around with that TV shit. And then we went and we watched the first episode of it for you guys at home. And I will tell you right now, I regret it.
I am never watching a TV show again. Not for the podcast, just in life. I'm done with TV after having seen this.
Because you know what it was?
Boring. It was so boring. It was 45 minutes long, and never have me and Tom been more bored than during these 45 minutes, than when we've been watching two-hour-long Universal Soldier movies. Like,
this was so boring. We watched like the first episode of the series. Bobby UK, Robert England, he is in it.
Yeah, it was like an anthology story, kind of ripping off like Tales from the Crypt, stuff like that. So the idea was that it would be a series of short stories and Freddy Krueger was kind of the Crypt Keeper telling the stories because they were his nightmares.
And they were all based in Springwood, Ohio. First episode, though, potentially could have been quite interesting because it is about Freddy Krueger. It's the events of his trial, the trial being dismissed, and then him getting killed off. And obviously we've seen him being killed off a few times in different films now, but this series, I think, happened like before those films. And you think like, oh, cool, so we get to see the court, we get to see like, it's just...
I want to see the court case.
Yeah, it's just so boring. It's so boring.
It's really bad, guys. It's available online. I would urge you to not watch it. Robert Englund is in it. You never really see him.
I still am not even convinced. That, like, he shows up at the beginning and it's clearly him in proper Freddy makeup, very dimly lit. Like, they're barely showing him because I think, like, it looks shit. It looks like shit 80s TV. So they're really trying to kind of like cover up Freddy, I think. But every other shot of him, like when he's like out of Freddy makeup before he gets killed, you don't see his face. I just think like they paid Robert Englund shot for a day and then they shot some other schmuck in a hat, had his back to the camera the whole time. He does a voice that does not sound like the evil Freddy dead dream demon kind of voice.
Yeah.
There's some terrible, terrible acting in it. There's like people either just phoning it in ridiculously or they're operating at 11. They're just screaming.
In brief, it's a story called No More Mr. Nice Guy. And the concept is we see the trial where Freddy gets let off because he wasn't read his rights properly when they arrested him, supposedly. And then it's the story of the cop who leads the lynch mob to hunt him down, sets him on fire, and then is inexplicably racked with guilt. I mean, I guess he is a murderer. He's
really by the book cop, and he's like, no, we're not going to resort to mob mentality. And it's like, no, I believe in the law, but today the law is on vacation. And he just pours petrol over Freddy, who just stands there laughing, going, come on then, let's have a little barbecue. And he burns him, and Freddy's like, this is fucking brilliant. And then he dies. And then the cop just loses his shit, but also gets a really bad case of sensitive teeth.
Yeah, he's got like serious toothache to the point that he's like, he's really stressed out. He's on the end of the bed, is in his pajamas, trying to enjoy just a nice relaxing can of beer before bed, you know? It's too cold for his bed beer. It hurts his tooth. So then one of the guys that helped him move the body after they...
One of
the guys that helped with the killing is a dentist, and he's like, come in and see me tomorrow. Long story short, like, he fucks around, like, with being stalked by Freddy. It turns up at the dentist. There's a weird little scene in there where the laughing gas or whatever it is makes him picture the dentist in her lingerie.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, I can see through your clothes. And she's like, it's just the gas making you crazy. And then the dentist turns into Freddy. And this is the one cool bit.
Yeah.
Freddy's claw, his like glove claw, instead of knives, he's got drills. And he's like, open wide for Freddy. I'm gonna drill your mouth a bit. And then we cut away from that. And he's just got like just a tiny bit of blood on his mouth, but he's dead.
45 minutes for that. Not worth it. And there's so many bits in it where like the guy's like, oh my god, I burnt Fred Krueger to death, and everyone goes, it's okay, Mr. Policeman, you're not a murderer. Yes, he is.
categorically.
It's 100%. What he just described to you is murder.
Dictionary definition.
Anyway, that was like official Freddy Fare. And it was bad. And we will not be watching television ever again for this podcast or ever in our lives. We watched then a fan film.
Unofficial Freddy Fare. Shorter, 30 minutes. It's available on YouTube. It's a fan-made, non-endorsed short film called The Confession of Fred Krueger.
Mm.
Now, this is interesting as well because normally me and Tom sit down and watch these things together. We've both seen this, but we watched it separately. So, and we haven't asked each other about it yet. So, yeah. Tom, I know what I think.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I thought it was so much better than...
it was really good, right? Yeah.
The majority of it is actually, like, it gives, like, so much of, like, that backstory that you might want for Freddy. Like, it takes you through his childhood and how he became a killer. Like, they really, like, flesh it out. The only things that I think don't work is when, like, the guy who is playing Freddy, I think he does quite a good job for, like, a guy in a fan film who's just, like, having a go. Apart from the bits when he's in a boiler room going, with his razor glove. And those bits look a bit silly. There's a bit where like he's there with like a child's doll and like the razor glove going, and it's kind of like, okay, that's not scary. But other than that,
overall, it is really strong, especially for a fan film. So I agree. The concept is that it is right after Freddy Krueger has been arrested for the murders, just before the trial where he gets let off.
Mm.
And it's him, the whole film is basically him in the interrogation room confessing.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an offstage presence of all of the parents that are just outside the confession room trying to hammer their way in and like lynch mob him. So that's kind of an added element to it.
Mm.
Super interesting. I think it adds some cool stuff to it. So there's some nice little twists of dialogue. For example, the cop asks Freddy how old he is. Freddy says he doesn't know.
Oh, yeah, because he's an orphan.
He's an orphan. He's like, dunno. Guesses he's about 30. He grew up in Dayton, Ohio, was raised by a guy who is now dead because Freddy burned the house down.
So, yeah, it also builds that Freddy is also kind of a pyromaniac.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's his like adopted father, as we know from the other films. That's Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
Yeah. That's super good. And then that Alice Cooper character in this was a bit of a pimp. And potentially it's hinted out like
that he'd molested.
That he'd like molested Freddy and that was why he burned the house down. And then they the cop asks him like why he was murdering children, which is something that we've talked about before. Like why? Is it just
and
that
why the glove?
Him? And why the glove? And Freddy's got these great lines. Oh, yeah, there's this cool story he tells about, like, the first murder, which is when he was, like, really desperate. He was homeless, and he was in an alley consoling himself with a bottle of booze.
Mm.
And some teenagers came along and tried to steal his booze from him.
Yeah, like, five kids. And he grabs one of them and murders him, but the other four get away. And so he carves these four slashes in him. And so that's the whole thing of like the glove and like the four razors. It's like symbolizing the four that got away.
Yeah.
See, this is like, this is all stuff that you actually kind of like, man, I wish that was I mean, I love the spooky dream tadpoles, but you wish that some of that was in the film. Same thing with the Freddy's nightmares. I wish that the story that they did in that had been done in a film like better. Like all that kind of like, rather than the Wile E. Coyote Freddy, to get a bit of that kind of like the... Not, you don't have to spell the whole thing out, but more of the psychology of the man.
Yeah, there's a really, really great line where Freddy just says, it's so short and it kind of really explains a bit of it. He says, I realised then that my future was in robbing children of theirs.
There you go.
And that's how he thinks and that's like, what a monster.
Yeah, like a reason why he's actually killed all these kids, like actually properly treats him as like a serial killer rather than, you know, like this cartoonish villain.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the big addition to like the lore for me is this extra scene where there's all those parents beating at the door trying to get in. Mm. One of them busts his way in, shouldn't do, but like he gets in and all the cops are trying to keep him away. He is Detective Thompson, that's his name. He's a policeman who's in there. That's how he was allowed to come through when he shouldn't have done.
Mm.
And he is Nancy's dad, right? He's cop dad.
Oh, yeah.
He's a young cop dad from the first film. And it turns out from this, sorry, this is a spoiler. If you want to watch the film, watch it now, go away, watch it now, come back and listen to this. Turns out that Nancy had an older sister who was killed by Freddy Krueger, named Sarah. Cop dad runs in and is like, he killed my little girl. He killed Sarah. And they're like, get out of here, Detective Thompson. And he's got to go home and like to his little baby girl, Nancy.
Nice.
Who will grow up to be stalked by Ghost Freddy.
Nah, that passed me by. Like it.
Yeah.
Check that out, people. If you've got the time and inclination in your lives to watch fan films on the internet.
And then the end credits roll to a song by the band The Tiger Lilies, which is just a band I really like. I've been to see them 2 times. I would strongly suggest going to check out The Tiger Lilies if they're in your town.
Great stuff. Now, Todd, we should bring it on home fairly soon, but it is tradition on these wrap-ups that we will pitch our own ideas for a sequel to this franchise. There's a load of films in there. Fuck it, bung a few more on.
Why the fuck not?
Why not?
Now, sometimes in the past we've gone silly, sometimes we've gone super ambitious. I am really keen to find out what you, Tommy, my good buddy, have come up with for your own personal entry to the Elm Street canon.
Okay, well, hold on to your butts, because here it comes. I am submitting for your approval the new entry into the Nightmare on Elm Street canon. It is Wes Anderson's new nightmare.
Oh my god! Sold!
Yep, okay, that's it. No, I've got more. So, when I saw Suspiria for the first time...
Huge Suspiria fan.
I know, well, you were the one that brought me to go and see it. And I was like, the visuals is like, fuck, some of this looks like a Wes Anderson film. Like, all these like super saturated colours and stuff. I was thinking like... Man, with like all that kind of like beautiful, kind of like really like pristinely laid out set pieces and symmetry and all this kind of like weird, like otherworldly normality, I would just like to see Wes Anderson do a horror film.
I really want that too.
So, I mean, it's a little bit silly as well. I just wanted to be very Wes Anderson. So... I'm going to cast this thing as well. So Jason Schwartzman, love me some Jason Schwartzman, is Davy Krueger. He is Freddy's other secret child from another previous marriage. So like the you know, like the woman that he was married to when he had Maggie?
Oh, yeah.
He was married before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had Davy Krueger, now going under the name Krueger. It's pronounced Frankenstein. And killed that mum as well, and then married Maggie's mum and had Maggie. Now, he's been away and he's moved back to Elm Street, but he's just like, his job as a child photographer is just really suffering because of the connotations of his family. So this whole film is going to be a lot of family counselling sessions that take place in the dream world. So you've got Jason Schwartzman as Davy Krueger. You've got the counselor, played by Bob Balaban.
Of course.
Yeah. Frances McDormand will play Freddy's mum, the nun. Tilda Swinton, she can be Freddy's other dead wife. we'll get Ralphie Fiennes. He can be the new Freddy Krueger, because I loved him in just doing like that sort of like hyper camp character that he did in
Grand Budapest Hotel.
I really want him to just play Freddy Krueger like that, like having these conversations with his son, be like, oh, my son, my darling boy, why are you ashamed? He's just gutted that his son is ashamed. Why are you calling it Krueger? It's Krueger.
My name is Bobby Great Britain.
Yes, exactly. And then... finally, we will have the return of the Dream Tadpoles, as voiced by Harvey Keitel, Owen Wilson, and Jeff Goldblum.
Sold. I'm in. I love it.
Great. Because I really hope that happens.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't know if it will, but if it does, You heard it here first.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Thanks, Tom. I'm slightly embarrassed to tell you my, like, overly sincere sequel concept now.
Hit me.
So there is, it's quite sincere. It's just a film that I want to see.
Okay.
There is a hidden metaphor that is topical, vaguely topical, in the plot line. So
I'll see if I can spot it.
Don't necessarily call it out, but it's just that's a little game that you can play. And if you're listening at home, you can keep an ear out for that too. It's a certain point in the story.
Mm.
Okay. So my film is A Nightmare on Elm Street 7, Dream Army.
Right? Okay. Good just, title.
I'm
good
just
title.
Upping the stakes.
I'm going to get, here's your $1 million. That's an advance for you. I'm not asking to film the film on $1 million. We'll give you more budget than that. That's just for you to take.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. So Nightmare on Elm Street 7 Dream Army is set after the events of Freddy's Dead, the final nightmare, but not in the meta-universe of Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So within this world, Freddy Krueger is gone, but he is not a fictional character.
Mm.
So Westin Hospital, home of the Dream Warriors and birthplace of Freddy Krueger, that is demolished, and the plot of land is sold to an eccentric billionaire named Mac Silverblood.
Good name.
Thanks, mate. My name game is strong in this one. Mac Silverblood, eccentric billionaire, turns the hospital into a serial killer-themed amusement park, similar to the London Dungeons, and he names it Murderland. Now, the highlight of Murderland is a Freddy Krueger-inspired roller coaster called Freddy's Dream Train. It's decorated with real equipment from Freddy's boiler room and, controversially, the bones of some of his victims.
Damn.
Mac Silverblood does not give a shit.
He is a crazy man.
He's an irresponsible dude out to exploit a quick buck from a sensational idea. So he hires the cheapest labor he can without asking too many questions. This includes hiring a lot of old homeless guys, many of whom secretly are the ex-inmates of Westin Hospital who got released by clerical error when it closed. They are the very same maniacs who collectively assaulted Freddy's mother and fathered Freddy all those years ago.
Ooh.
And they've got their hands on the controls of Freddy's dream train. Now, a bunch of teens from the local school newspaper, they get invited to the grand opening of Murderland as part of a press event. They get to go on a few of the rides. You know, they go on Charles Manson's Helter Skelter. They go on Jack the Ripper's Big Dipper. They go on H.H. Holmes' Thunderdome. Ed Gein's Mean Machine. Happy Clan Time with John Wayne Gacy. And, of course, Ted Bundy's Bungee. But when the time comes to try Freddy's Dream Train, things get weird. It turns out that the staff, a.k.a. those previous inmates of the hospital, they drugged the champagne at the launch event with a cocktail of Hypnosil and tranquilizers.
Oh.
So the kids riding the roller coaster, they all fall asleep from the tranquilizers, but because of the Hypnosil, everything they dream happens in the real world too. Now, that's a rule I've just invented.
Okay, nice. I mean, you've got to invent new rules every time.
Of course, because they're trapped on Freddy's dream train, they dream of Freddy. So Freddy comes back to life. This is all part of the staff's plan to resurrect Freddy and bring their son back to life. So Freddy bursts into the real world. The movie at this point turns into a series of set pieces as Freddy rains down havoc on the VIP visitors to the theme park, while the sleepy kids go round and round on his ride. All of the other serial killers the rides are themed on also come to life via people's dreams, and so Freddy teams up with the world's most infamous serial killers to form a dream army of murderers with him as the leader. The climax sees Freddy's army kidnapping Mac Silverblood, tying him up in a cocoon and sticking him on top of a large stick, like a flag or a banner. And they keep him permanently tranquilized, and the army of nightmares burst out the theme park gates. The final scene of the film is the nightmare army marching on Washington, and the movie ends with a shot of Freddy sat behind the desk of the Oval Office in the White House. The tranquilized Mac Silverblood is behind him, wrapped in an American flag with millions of dollars pouring out of his pocket, keeping Freddy in the real world while he sleeps. Freddy signs an executive order, looks at the camera, and says, "Welcome to prime time, bitch." Then the credits roll.
Whoa! Yeah, into that. It's kind of like a Freddy does Jurassic Park kind of vibe. Super inappropriate using all these real life serial killers, but I love it. I don't know if I could really spot the subtext that you had hidden in there, but maybe
it's a comment about Euro Disney.
I get it. Love it, mate. Totally all over that. Can Mac Silverblood be played by the angry dad from That 70s Show who plays Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop.
Well, I don't get either of those two references, so I'm going to say yes.
Awesome! He's an angry bald man. It's what the part needs. So,
is it?
It's time for us to kind of finish, because I am dog tired right now. Before we go, could I trouble you, put you on the spot, favourite bit?
I'm going to have to say the weird, creepy vein marionette scene where Freddy uses the kid's veins to like make him move around like a puppet on a string in Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors.
Strong. I'll give you one guess about what my favourite bit is.
Is it Cool Modi?
No, it is the coffee hidden under the bed. I will never grow tired of that.
I'm going to get you a t-shirt, which is just that bit from the screenplay printed on it.
Nancy pulled a second coffee percolator out from under the bed. Her mum had not noticed. Thank you. So, before we figuratively, literally, metaphorically put this puppy and ourselves to bed, there is one task left at hand. Todd, we're doing another season, right?
Of course we're going to do another season, guys!
So, what are we going to do?
Season 6. Well, again, thank you so much for listening all the way through Season 5 with us. We know it's not always been a delight, but it's always been fun. And those are two separate things.
Definitely.
So, we're going to do this all over again. We've got to pick a different season. Now, if you listen to this franchise because you love horror, I've got some horrifying news for you. We are not going to do a horror season next time. We're doing a different genre, but we really hope you come back. It's going to be just as brutal. It's going to be just as shocking.
It could be more hellish. Because like the whole deal here is that we're looking at just franchises all over the show. So we've done a load of action and fantasy and horror. We're taking it down a road we've never been down before.
We thought long and hard about this because we weren't sure it was the right thing to do. But then we looked deep into each other's souls and it didn't necessarily seem right, but it seemed like it was our duty to do it. I'm here to tell you guys that I think this is going to be our toughest season yet.
I'm a bit worried. So this season should perhaps be funny?
It should be, but I don't know if it will.
What are we doing, Todd?
We're doing Police Academy.
Yes, folks, we are diving into the ensemble Steve Guttenberg comedy franchise Police Academy.
Seven movies boshed out in quick succession, possibly in an ill-advised manner, starting with the original Police Academy, followed by Police Academy 2, Their First Assignment, then Police Academy 3, Back in Training, Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol, Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, Police Academy 6, City Under Siege, and then finally, Police Academy 7, Mission to Moscow.
Oh, I am excited and terrified. I think the only one of these I've ever really seen is Police Academy 6?
Whoa! I went to see the seventh one at the cinema as a
Whoa,
kid.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. It's going to be a different ride, but I'm up for it. I'm up for the challenge.
I've got that 1,000-yard stare, man.
Ooh, I mean, if you haven't got it now, we probably will by the end of this.
So, yeah, thank you very, very much. We do hope that you will come back next season and check out Police Academy with us. As always, this podcast would be super, super weird if it was just me and Tom talking into a mic and no one was listening. So we really, really appreciate hearing from you guys. We're going to probably take a few weeks off because, you know, it's quite intense watching all these
things. We've got to chill out a little.
There might be a cheeky bonus episode in the meantime while we're on our break. But if you keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter, we'll let you know when we're coming back. And if you make sure that you're subscribed via your podcasting app of choice, then the new episodes will pop up for you anyway. So it's no biggie. What are you worrying about?
Take it easy.
Yeah. So, yeah, and until then, we better stop because, Tom, you look knackered, mate.
Oh, it's been a long season, mate. Just so much of Bobby.
Oh, little baby boy needs to go to bed.
Here's Bobby. You're acting Bobby.
Oh, he's fallen asleep, guys. He's sleeping like a baby.
Oh, fuck off, Depo. Fuck off, Depo. Fuck.
Oh, no, he's having a bad dream.
Fuck off, Depo.
Tom, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Stop smuggling those dogs. Stop smuggling those dogs and doing those stupid pirate films. Fuck off, Depo. Fuck off, Depo.
Oh, no. Guys, Tom has flown off his chair. He's rolling around on the ceiling.
Depo!
Guys, Tom's dead. Everyone's going to think I did it because I'm such a musician type. I'm out of here, guys. Don't tell the cops. They're coming now. I can hear the sirens. See you later, guys. See you here for season 6.